Good afternoon. Well, how you going there, Brett? Nice to see you again. Nice to see everybody. We see Brett every once in a while. He comes down and does his best to disrupt things for us. But we manage to survive each year, or however often he comes. So, you can't go to Steamboat Springs. Isn't that amazing? Well, you know, you can come to Brisbane, you can come to Queensland. Now, Brett can tell you about that. The FMOFs, a few of the others can tell you about how nice it is. Think about it. And we have a very nice fee site. We have plenty of room. You don't have to ask permission of anybody except the Australian government. And they'll let you come in. And nice accommodation, plenty of it, and very nice fee site. I just thought I'd let you know. And I thought everything Mr. Fay had to say, I was listening closely to what he had to say about your feast arrangements and some of the restrictions that you have. I thought I'd just give you a little plug to come on down and enjoy the feast there. So it's a very nice feast site. I'm sure you'll have a good one here. Most people really enjoy the feast these days. Always have. In fact, it's a very important time of the year, and wherever you go, choose to go, it's the spiritual aspect, of course, that is the most important. Thank you very much for that special music. Very well done. I mean, it's extremely well done, wasn't it? And very pleased that you performed that. I didn't know that there was any. I was on my way up here, and all of a sudden, oh, wow, we have special music. So I sat back down again, and glad I was able to hear that performed for us today from Julie and Jill. I noticed there's no, I don't have my watch, there's no clock on the wall. I don't know what that means. You know, I can't see that. That's something. Okay. There was this this pastor who had a very wealthy parishioner and came to him one day and said, tell you what I'm going to do for you. So I want to send you to the Middle East, give you a tour of the Holy Land for as long as you want. Matter of fact, I've got a tour arranged for you. You can go everywhere in the Holy Land, something you've always wanted to do. I'll pay for it. It'll take you 2 months. The pastor says, well, I don't know if I could look, go. It's all done, paid for. These are the dates. So, and he, furthermore, he said, when you come back, I'll have a big surprise for you. So he took him up on it, went to the Holy Land, came back in exactly 2 months, and when he came back, they showed him, to much to his surprise, a brand new building that they had built, that this wealthy parishioner also financed, and he paid for it, built this beautiful building. He said, "This is beautiful inside and out." He says, "It's more than that." He says, "Come on in." So he came in and he took a look around and he saw it was absolutely fabulous, more than anything he could ever hope for. But there was only one thing that he saw that he had a question about. There was only one pew, and that was all the way in the back. And he asked his patron, he says, "Well, why'd you do that?" He says, "Look, don't worry about it." I said, "I think you and I both know why we have, let's say, a pew in the back. That's where people tend to sit." But he says, "Don't we need it?" He says, "Don't worry about it. You show up. This Sunday will be the opening day. You come on in. And everything will be fine." So the pastor trusted him. Everything else went fine so far. So he came in. There was the one pew in the back when he came in. And he was early that day. And he watched as people came in. And they sat on the back row as they normally do. Well, in fact, that was the only one. Well, now, as soon as the back row was filled, then he started to hear a few motors whirring. And a few wheels began to crank, and something began to happen. And all of a sudden, the pew began to move forward, and a door opened in the back, and another pew popped up. And so people came in and they filled up that pew. And as they did, the same thing happened again, and it all moved forward. And it kept moving forward as the people began to fill up the back pew. All the time the back pew got filled. And the people who came in first, lo and behold, they wound up in front. The pastor thought this was an absolutely amazing thing. So he gets up and he begins to preach the sermon. He is so inspired, so absolutely elated over this. However, comes 12 o'clock, and he keeps going strong, and it looks like that there is, you know, no end to it, and all of a sudden, the trap door opens. Not the funniest joke in the world, but at least set you up for it. So there we are. The annual trek to Chicago. I did come here last year, didn't I? Yeah, and you were at a different place, weren't you? And I do like this hall. I'm glad you've, I don't know if you're glad you're back here, but I tend to like it. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad Mr. Fay updated you on whatever occurred at the general conference. And there are a lot of implications for that, of course, down the line. And some changes, of course, in the next few years as all of that develops. Today, the subject is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Why is that so, and what does it mean? We read this in several places in the Bible, in fact, three places where it says this directly. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Proverbs 1, verse 7, it says that. And in Proverbs chapter 9, in verse 10, it says it again also, and we're going to read another place. It alludes to it in other places. It's a very important principle, and a principle that we want to develop today. It's a very fundamental principle, and it's so fundamental that sometimes we tend to overlook it. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Why is this so? Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. And by me your days will be multiplied, and the years of life will be added to you. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. And if you scoff, you will bear it alone. We begin to get a little bit of an idea as to what the fear of the Lord is and why it is the beginning of wisdom when it speaks of how your days, of course, will be multiplied and the years of life will be added to you. And then it speaks of scoffing, of course, that is not learning the wisdom or the lessons that a person needs to learn. I recently spoke on a subject matter which I asked Mr. Fay if it was a good idea to bring it to you today, and he suggested it perhaps was not the most relevant subject, and that is on the idea that it seems to be sweeping the country. It certainly is in Australia, and it's promoted by Oprah, called The Secret. You probably have heard of this, or even if you didn't hear about it, that's okay. You're not really missing anything, because The Secret is not really much of a secret, because it's been going on for a long time. But it has to do where people then are able to have everything they want in life by simply wishing or thinking about what they want, whether it's health, happiness, relationships, prosperity, success, and that you can have it because you're able to attract it through positive and believing thoughts about that particular subject. And they have all kinds of testimonies, and they say this has been going on for a long time. It's a part of human nature to want solutions and fixes for our problems without understanding the causes of those problems. We don't want to really get down to, well, why are we in the situation that we're in today? We simply want out of them. And this idea of The Secret tends to illustrate the idea that people simply are not prepared to take a look at, well, why are things the way they are today? Why are these things happening to me? How did I get in the situation that I'm in today? What actually caused it? Now, people do look for answers to the difficulties they are having. However, they tend to look in the wrong places. And this is only one illustration of how that happens. Now, the system that I just mentioned requires no standard of conduct. It requires no, let's say there are no standards of behavior. The values of a person's life, let's say, this does not quite get a mention. There is no consideration that a person may be reaping the consequences of their own actions. And that if anything is going to change for the individual, that is change on a permanent basis, then the person has to make that change as a result of his own choices and his discipline, if he's going to experience any kind of difference in his life at all, and if he's ever going to achieve what he wants to achieve and become the person he wants to become. This is an inside job, of course, but a person has to take a look at what he's thinking. He has to take a look at not just a matter of wishing, but what is he doing? How did he get to where he is today? The world has always tried to minimize the consequences of wrong actions or wrong living. There are times when we think, and many of our philosophies and many of our systems today have tried, or let's say they tend to lead us in the direction that we have somehow found a way, then, or we have perfected a system that escapes the penalties and the consequences for sin. You find a lot of systems simply lead you to that conclusion. The medical system is one of those. It attempts to deal with the effects of the problem, focusing on the problems that people have after it occurs, rather than prevention through right living. I think you understand that if as much thought and research and money and education were put into the right way to live as there is on dealing with the results of how we live and the way we live, there would be much less sickness. Now, there are some focus on prevention. I'm not saying there isn't. But sometimes, only after the problem becomes so widespread that we begin to ask, well, now, how do we get ourselves into this? Cancer is one of these. And it's unfortunate that they still don't know, well, what's causing this? Well, there has to be a cause. However, how much money then is collected? How much research is going into curing cancer once you get it? Well, I think this illustrates the point. Australians, one of the big widespread sicknesses that we have in Australia is type 2 diabetes. It's in proportions that people are very, very alarmed by this, and we have a result of something, and they in this case are able to identify the result. I'm sorry, the cause of it, and they simply say bad diet and lack of exercise is the result of is the cause of type 2 diabetes. And it says it's something that's entirely preventable, and yet one might say plague proportions, not that it's catchable, but that's how they look at it. We've got, they say there's 600,000 Australians who don't even know they have it. Well, we've simply gone down a certain road in a particular type of behavior that leads to this. It is thought, and you probably have heard this, that the next generation after ours will have a lower lifespan than ours because primarily of the fast food industry and, of course, the lack of, exercise that children should have growing up. They simply don't, they're not into, developing themselves as they ought to physically, and their diet is very bad. And other bad habits have crept in, and where our generation, that is the baby boomers, because of a lot of innovations in the medical area, we are going to live longer, and we are doing what we can to improve our diet. A lot of people are doing this. The next generation coming along, and well, maybe not exactly the next generation, but the one after that, the one in where you have so many overweight children. It's a big problem in Australia. They focus on this. A week doesn't go by. We don't have a program on overweight children, and simply because that of very, very bad habits, and that they are saying that the life expectancy could be as low as 50 in that particular generation. Now, I can't prove these particular figures, but I simply want to point out that it becomes very clear that there are results, there are consequences for what a person does. It's in more than that. I think I've simply illustrated in a way that you can understand, that we would all agree with, most people would agree with. However, one of the most elusive principles in the areas of understanding is that we have reaped the consequences of what we have done or how we have lived, and that there is a cause for every effect. I say it's an elusive principle because it's something we tend not to want to know, that we have done something to bring about the situation that we're in. The whole craze on pop psychology and the number of therapies that have come out of that to try to change people, or to try to get people to perhaps think in a positive way. It's a part of the New Age thinking. This idea of the secret, as I told you, is also an extension of New Age ideas that have come along, and that if you just simply think about that, if you focus in on the positive thinking, then somehow things will begin to change for you. Now, it's only going to change to whatever extent you stop doing what you're doing that's causing what's causing it. And we tend to ignore the idea, or not want to face it, that what we have done, the ways that we have done, and it takes understanding to know this. It takes a great deal of understanding, and that's why the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and with it comes understanding. I want you to notice here in verse 10, and I didn't point this out, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So we have wisdom, we have knowledge, and we have understanding in one verse, and put in just this way. We need to know how things work. People go through life and they never figure out how or why things work the way they do. They continue to suffer certain consequences in their lives, and they simply repeat the same thing again and again. The Bible speaks of those, and I'll speak of that in just a moment. But the big lesson of history is that we haven't learned from history. You need something bigger than you to instruct you. We tend to learn from experience, if we learn. And if we learn well, we do learn from experience. Now, you can learn from the instruction of the Lord. Now, that's why it says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Now, you do not hear the message from psychologists or behaviorists that if you want relief from your pain, if you don't want the consequences you are experiencing, then change your behavior. Now, that's the hard way, but it's the only way. Now, there is a beginning of wisdom, and we read from God the solution that He gives. If you want things to change for yourself, you need to repent, and you need to turn from your ways. Now, that's very basic, it's very fundamental, but that's the message that you find in the Bible. Wisdom, then. Let's consider the idea of wisdom and what this is. Wisdom is knowing the end of a matter. Now, there's a little bit more to it than that. But a person can have wisdom Simply put, he knows what is going to happen if you take a certain course of action. Now that's wisdom. It's not there, but you simply know how it's going to turn out. Wisdom is knowing what will happen if you take a certain course of action, that there is a consequence for that action. There is either a good result or there is a bad result. Now, there is a further thing that we can say about wisdom. It is also implies the character to carry through with what you know is the right thing. Psalm 111 verse 10, Solomon obviously got this from his father David. And this is where you find it. You also find it in the book of Job, Job 28 verse 28, a similar thought but not said exactly in this way. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Psalm 111 verse 10, a good understanding have all those who do his commandments. Now why do they have a good understanding? Because they know what will happen if you don't do his commandments. Now God wants you to obey him, of course, because you all know that God is God. Now some say, oh, I obey God because I love him. Now all that's nice, and that's a nice sentiment, and this is why we say the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And there are other things, but the beginning of wisdom, in the way it's stated that way, because this is very fundamental. This is such a fundamental concept here, a fundamental idea, that we tend to overlook it, and we can tend to go on to other things, hoping that things will work out for our lives, working out for this or that or whatever else we're doing, without analyzing, is what I'm doing resulting, or will it result in something down the line? Now, you don't know this sometimes, and sometimes you do. And the only way that you're going to know it, if you don't have prior experience, is for somebody bigger than you to tell you, somebody a lot smarter than you to tell you. And that's why the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so if you fear the Lord, you're going to listen to what he's got to say. And you're going to say, well, if he says that's going to happen, it's going to happen. I don't have to go experience that. Now, you don't want to go experience a lot of things that you're going to find out is going to result in a certain action. God can say with utter and complete and total clarity exactly what will happen to you if you take a certain action. He's done it over and over again in the pages of his Bible, and there are a lot of people who have read the Bible and have been saved from some pretty terrible things, and other people completely miss the point whenever they're reading the Bible. This first philosophy that there are no consequences and you can do whatever you want to do and you can figure these things out for yourself started right back in the Garden of Eden in Genesis, the third chapter, where the serpent came along and began to introduce this idea, first of all, to the woman. And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Now that's what she was told. Now the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. Now what did she mean? And how did she understand it? What did God mean when he said that? Because God did say that. On the day that you eat thereof, you shall surely die. Or in dying, you shall die. The Hebrew is a little bit, it doesn't mean that you're going to die right then and there. Now, they were offered some choices right there in the Garden of Eden. They were offered the choice of the tree of life, which of course would have been life. They could have made the choice to go down the path that would lead to eternal life, in which they would have been given the gift of the Holy Spirit. And Mr. Armstrong has explained this very clearly, over and over again. And it's something that should be, those of us who witnessed that and who heard it, should be able to, let's say, understand this very clearly. That this was the choice that was given to them, and then, of course, the other choice was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And he said, if you do that, you shall not surely die. Now, that meant, what God meant was, is that you weren't going to die that very day, that very 24-hour period. That meant eternal death. If you go down this road, this means eternal death. You weren't going to suffer the consequence right on that very day, because obviously they didn't. They went on to live, and Adam lived, how long was it? 936 years. So, he didn't take the way to eternal life. He took the way, the path, that would lead to death. Eternal death, death from which there was no life, death from which that's it, there's nothing after that. That's the route you want to go. And the devil said, that's not going to happen. Now, sometimes the consequences of what you do is not immediately seen. And so too with Adam and Eve, they didn't immediately see the consequences. They saw some few right there because it disrupted their relationship with God at that point. However, there were certain things that were being offered them. For God knows that in the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you shall be like God, knowing good and evil. And so when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes, a tree desirable to make one wise. How so? Not the fear of the Lord, the beginning of wisdom, not that kind of wise. Wise in the sense that now they would take upon themselves the capacity or the ability to choose for themselves what they would want, and they would have to do this now by experience. Oh yes, they would become as one who would now decide right and wrong. Of course they would be doing that, and that's a very appealing thing. And the devil, of course, said, now you can go a lot further this way if you go down that road. And it was very, very appealing. They could have something right then and there in a way that God did not want them to have it. You know what Jesus said? He said, when he was explaining, this is in Matthew chapter 16, matter of fact, we ought to turn over there just for a moment, because it has everything to do with what we're saying today. Didn't mean to get into this. Matthew chapter 16. Peter declared that Jesus was indeed the Christ. Verse 21, from that time Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and raised the third day. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, said, far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you. And he turned to Peter and he said, get behind me, Satan, you are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. What are the things of men? It's what men can have here and now. It's what you can be. It's what you can become within this world, and this becomes the most important thing, and that's what was on Peter's mind, and that's exactly what the devil offered him. The devil offered him everything right then and there. All you had to do was fall down and worship him. He says, I will give you everything you want. You think that can happen to you? You get into this secret thing that I'm telling you about, the devil can start giving you a lot of things. It's happened before. Folks make a lot of deals with the devil. So Jesus goes on to say, if you don't believe it, here's what he says. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Now there's another way of life here. But whoever desires to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. That's not the route Adam and Eve wanted to go. For what profit is it to a man if he wins the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Do you think a person can gain so much in this world in exchange for his soul? You bet. And will the devil give it to him? You bet. Absolutely. He's a god of this world. He can throw things people's way. And it looks like things are going really good. I'll tell you what, God's law of consequences always catches up. But they don't see that. Now Christ saw that, and Christ was able to say, here's the route I'm going to take. and Peter, here's the route we're all going to take. I mean, you're either in or out right now. This is the deal. Deal or no deal. This is where we're going. He says, but you're going to have to take up your cross. He says, you're going to have to lose your life. He says, you willing to do that? He said, that's the road we're going to take. He said, now that's the road that's going to lead to life. Now, if you take this other road, you can have everything you want right now. And that's the devil had Adam and Eve strung out on that. They could have everything. It was appealing to them. And they said, that's the road we want to go down. Now, God could predict in his wisdom with total accuracy precisely what was going to happen. So he sent them out of the Garden of Eden. He made certain prophecies there as to what was going to happen the way it was. And as time went along, he began to make certain prophecies and say, here's how it's all going to end up. And so God, because he understands the wisdom, through his wisdom, consequences, he can predict with unerring accuracy how it was all going to turn out. And so he inspired the book of Revelation. Go ahead and read it. You see so much detail in the book of Revelation. How does he know that? God understands. He has the foresight so far ahead that he knows exactly what it's going to result in. He knows exactly how long it's going to take. And he knows in such detail that he can write the book of Revelation and say, here's how it's all going to turn out. He can do that because he knows the results of the direction that man has taken. He knows the consequences. He knows exactly what will take place. And so he can do that. Jesus Christ gets up in Matthew 24 and he gives a prophecy that is so accurate. Some of it is because of what he has planned to do. His counsel will stand, as it says, and he knows the end from the beginning. Because but he also understands the consequences of actions. He talks about wars. He talks about famines. He talks about earthquakes. He talks about a lot of things that are going to take place. And these are as a result, then, of just wholesale departure from God, from God's way, and it's all going to come to a certain point. Now, let me tell you something. One of the best ways of understanding prophecy is if you understand God's law, and if you understand how it works. People get a problem. Well, I got to understand. Let's go to Daniel chapter 12. Boy, we get the days figured out. I can tell you exactly how prophecy is. No, you can't. You can understand how things work by simply understanding God's law and knowing and seeing the violation of so many principles that are being violated in the world today, in our own country, amongst any particular person. You can tell this is how it's going. And you know exactly what's going on. You do this with your children, don't you? You say, now if you do this, this is what's going to happen. And hopefully sometimes, if the consequence is not too bad, you let them do it. Because obviously they're not going to listen to you. And so they do learn by experience, and so they're doing the same thing you did anyway. It doesn't matter. So we do this ourselves. We, in a small way, in some ways, in some things, can see the end of a matter. God can see the end of a matter all the way to its very end. And he can tell you exactly what's going to happen. It's important to have a fear of God and listen to what he says. Those who take God up on the fact that they're going to keep his commandments then have a good understanding, as we just read. They have a good understanding. And they know how it's all going to turn out. Now, fear of God is this. Let me define this for you. The fear of God is knowing what God says will happen if you take a certain course of action. The fear of God is knowing what God says will happen and that it will happen without fail. That's the fear of God. Some people like to explain the fear of God more of what it isn't. Well, you know, fear of God's not torment. I'm not supposed to fear God. Okay, that's fine. But you better understand one thing. God means what he says, otherwise he wouldn't be God. And so many try to tell us what fear isn't, and they approach the whole idea, well, the fear of God And what is it? No, I don't have to fear the person of God. I fear the person of God if I sin, but don't repent, because I'm going to have to account for that sin. You're always going to have to account for sin. Now, but it's important to know that the fear of God is knowing that God means exactly what He says. He cannot deviate from it. He will not compromise with it. It's an entire system that He set up here. Let's notice in Proverbs 26 and verse 10. Proverbs 26, 10. The great God who formed everything. That's very interesting. The great God who formed everything gives the fool his hire and the transgressor his wages. And as a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. And he adds another thought. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope of a fool than for him. Now, a fool is one thing, and we're going to talk about a fool in a moment and define that for you in the biblical sense. But God set up a system. As it says, the great God formed everything, and the fool and the transgressor will reap the wages of what he does. That's just simply the way it is. He formed it that way. God set up a system where it has to work this way. And this is what I'm telling you. If you understand the system, if you understand how things work, life can be so much better for you. Now, if you want to go against it, you're going to reap the consequences. And you may not understand what those consequences are right away. Now, you can have a lot of people around to tell you what those consequences are. I'm not saying everybody listens to what they're being told. I didn't. Growing up, my father used to try to tell me a lot of things. And I look back on it now, and I really appreciate what he told me. And I really appreciate what he was trying to do and trying to teach me. I appreciate what the consequences that he imposed on me for not doing what he told me to do. He always told me, he said, son, he said, now what I'm doing hurts me more than you. I said to myself, about that time I wasn't going to say anything, but I did say it to myself. I said, Dad, that's not right. It hurts me a lot more than it hurts you about what he's about to do, because I knew what he was about to do. So, God has to set up a whole system of consequences to help us understand that there is a right way. And He set up that system, and He's faithful to that system. He can't not be faithful to it. It's simply got to happen that way. Now, so the fear of God is knowing that God means what He says. Not just some of the time. The fear of God is knowing what He says will come to pass each time, every time, without fail. Now, whenever we make the choice to sin, we ought to ask, what is it that we're really doing? What we're doing is that We do weigh up the possibilities in our mind as to whether it's going to happen just like He says, or it's going to happen just like Mom and Dad said, or the way it's happened, the way you've always been taught. Is it going to happen that way? And so the person kind of weighs it up in his mind and thinks about it, and the temptation's there, and he says, I think I'll chance it just this once. Not a good idea. But this is essentially what we'll do. We weigh up the odds. You know, people are gamblers. We're going to weigh up the odds and say, is this going to happen the way I've been told? And a person makes a choice based on whether he thinks he can beat the odds. Now, there are a lot of factors that are going on here, but essentially this is what it amounts to. You somehow blank out whatever those consequences are. And there is a reason then why people sin. Let's notice in Psalm 36, verse 1. Psalm 36. Verse 1. An oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. There is no fear of God before his eyes, for he flatters himself in his own eyes. In other words, he convinces himself that somehow he's right. And when he finds out his iniquity and when he hates. In other words, it does all come back, and it's a very bitter thing. But he tends to flatter himself, thinks he can just get away with that. He can get away with all kinds of things. And there is no fear there. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Let's notice in Proverbs 1:7. Here's where he says it again. Proverbs 1:7. And he has a little bit of different thought. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, as it says here. It says the beginning of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. What's a fool in Bible language? A fool in Proverbs language is one who simply has not learned from instruction. Furthermore, he has not even learned from consequences or his own personal experiences of others, or his own experiences. A fool just keeps doing the same thing over and over again. Would you say that's a fool? He's supposed to say, yeah. Yeah, it's a fool. Right. That's what a fool is. Just keeps doing the same thing. Why would he keep doing this? There are... And so the Bible contrasts this. One might say verse 7 here is a synopsis in one sense, or a summary, of the whole book of Proverbs. And God has given to us this wonderful gift of wisdom that came from him. I understand Solomon wrote it, but David understood this. A lot of experience, a lot of trusting in God, having to learn. Solomon had to come along and do the same thing. God gave him the gift of wisdom, and he was able to put this together. So many people were able to put this together because they knew God, and they put it together for us. So we don't have to go down the same road a lot of people do. Now, unfortunately, there are fools. Meaning, we can read all we want to, and we're still going to try to divide. We're going to go our own way because it's so very appealing. And we think we can have something now. And we can take some shortcuts. And I want to tell you something. There are no shortcuts in life. None whatsoever. There is a way, and you got to follow that way. Proverbs 12, verse 15. Proverbs 12, 15. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. He's right. You can't talk him out of it. But he who heeds counsel is wise. It doesn't say he's received lashes or penalties or consequences. He simply heeds counsel. He listens to what other people say. Chapter 15, verse 5. A fool despises his father's instruction, but he who receives correction is prudent. If you listen to it, if you receive the correction, you're looked upon as a person who's very prudent. Proverbs 14, verse 6, just to cover a few points right here close by. A scoffer seeks wisdom but does not find it. The Lord, he wants to know. He wants to figure out the system. He wants to figure out what works. But he's not. He wants to take all the shortcuts in the world. He seeks wisdom, does not find it, but knowledge is easy to him who understands. You have to be willing to learn. I have a whole slew of scriptures here. You can go through them yourselves. I like the one in Proverbs 27:22. Though you grind a fool in a mortar with a pestle, along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. Now that is really a fool. He just goes through it again and again and keeps suffering the same thing, never begins to take to analyze, well, maybe I did something wrong here. What are some of the things we do, incidentally? I meant to cover this a little bit earlier. We do try to find a way to escape responsibility for our own actions. One of the things we do, we blame circumstances and we blame other people. And we never get down to the fact that, wait a minute, I'm here in this situation, I've created this, this is my baby, I got to deal with it. Best thing I can do is to take small steps, maybe even baby steps, to begin to change. You know, it's the first thing you do. You got to decide, you got to change. You got to change your ways. I brought this on myself. Well, no, I didn't, so-and-so did this, so-and-so did. We cry and we carry on and, well, wait a minute. All right, there comes a point we got to take a look at things ourselves and make some changes and turn to God, and He'll begin to show you what it is you need to do. If you turn to God in repentance, here's one of the solutions here. You turn to God in repentance. You're just tired of suffering the same kind of thing over and over again. And you don't understand what's happening. Look, I realize I gave you some very, basic, rudimentary examples. There are many. There are things that goes on in a person's heart, goes on in a person's mind. They can start off this way, and pretty soon it leads to certain actions and certain very, very bad habits, and it begins to destroy your relationships. Couple of examples. The book of Proverbs talks about we'll cover that in just a moment here. I don't want to get to it just yet, but it talks about sexual crime or sins that really hurt people. Where does it start? It has to start somewhere. Jesus said, if you look upon a woman and lust after her in your own heart, you've already committed adultery. So Jesus understood that the disobeying of God's law is first of all violated in one's thoughts. And that then, of course, is the precursor or that which leads to the actual act itself. Now, how do you start to go down that road? A person, boys, can kind of get into a certain frame of mind, simply because that's what boys tend to do. I'm saying this to the boys here. You got your magazines and you got your TV shows and it's all kind of, you start to go down that road. You might say, oh, well, that's just harmless. Not, how many times have you heard this doesn't hurt anybody? How many times have you heard that? Okay. Let's do a quantum leap then, all the way years later in the marriage then. The person, because he's already got a lot of stuff in his mind from what he's seen, and maybe he's experienced it, now he's not quite satisfied over here in his marriage. Now he wonders why he's got problems in his marriage. And he doesn't understand that it started way over here. Nobody understands this. You start to go down a certain road. You start to take a certain path, and you don't understand how it's going to end up over here. God said right at the beginning, don't get involved with this. Look, let me show you something here. Proverbs chapter, 7. And just this one particular sin. Verse 6. For at the window of my house I looked through my lattice and saw among the simple, I perceived among the youths a young man devoid of understanding, passing along the street near her corner, and he took the path to her house. Don't ever start going down the path. Now he's taking the wrong path here. In the twilight, in the evening, in the black and the dark of night, and that's when it happens. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot, a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. And at times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking in every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me today. I paid my vows, so I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face. Makes the guy feel real good, see. And I have found you, and I have spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. There are no consequences now. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him. He will come home on the appointed day. Christ is going to come back and hold everyone to account, and that's the ultimate accountability. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, and he doesn't understand that's what's going to happen to him. Or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, until an arrow struck his liver and a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would cost his life. What will you give in exchange for your own soul? Now, therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways, and they're out there. Do not stray into her paths, for she has cast down many wounded. Have we been wounded? All who were slain by her were strong men. This won't hurt me. I'm impervious to this consequence. I'm bulletproof. Isn't that what you say? It's always there. If it wasn't, God wouldn't be God. It's always there. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. A fool keeps doing the same thing again and again. He thinks he won't get caught, or he thinks it won't happen to him this time. He thinks he can somehow get away with it. And he will not learn from instruction whenever he or she is told, and will not even learn from the consequences of sin, because there is an immediate payoff. There's something the person gets now. And you have to recognize these things when they come along. And Jesus gave a totally different way of life. He says, if you're going to have life, you need to give it up. If you want everything in this world now, you might get it. But the price is going to be very, very high. What do you think about that? One needs to ask, how does a person get to be a fool? Let's go there for them. Matter of fact, let's go there for the rest of the sermon. I think it's a very important point. Proverbs 22, verse 6. Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. You know, a lot of people are saying these days, who used to believe this, that it doesn't work this way. And I want to tell you something. They don't know what they're talking about. Now, if it didn't quite work right, then something didn't go too well during the process. But now there's other things there. It says, when he is old, he will not depart from it. In other words, he will tend to come back to it. But it does say, train up a child in the way that he should go. Now, a person properly trained, they understand wisdom. They understand that there's a certain behavior that brings a certain consequence. Now, in Proverbs 29:15, it says this. The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Now, I think you and I can understand why the rod and rebuke give wisdom. And I can always remember that there came a certain time I went too far, and you knew what my dad was going to do. I mean, you didn't know, I knew. And you know, he was consistent. And he had a certain standard, and some things he just simply would not, and you knew what that was. Now, at the time, I liked it. Matter of fact, I didn't. That's when he said, "Son, it's going to hurt me more than hurt you." I said in my mind, "No, sir, it doesn't. It's going to hurt me a lot more." Well, now I understand that now. I understand what he said. But the rod and the rebuke give wisdom. Now, you can expect a child to have wisdom, to know what to do, just automatically know what to do. They're going to listen to you? No. They have to understand that there are certain consequences. And so what we have here then, in the process of teaching your child not to be a fool when he grows up, is that you structure within a proper way, within the family, consequences then that comes to bear whenever there's a certain behavior or a certain attitude. You do this. You take the cue from God, who does this. Now, let's don't go stray too far from here, but let's go over to Hebrews chapter 12. And he says, "Now, have you forgotten the exhortation, verse 5, which speaks to you as unto sons? My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives." Another thing my father used to say, he said, "Son, I'm doing this because I love you." He would. He'd say that every time. And you know what I would reply in my own mind? I said, "If you would love me, you wouldn't do this to me." That's what I said. But I wouldn't repeat it because I knew it wouldn't go over too well. Just at that point, you did not want to say that. But that's right. Whom the Lord loves, he chastens. Well, why? He does not want you to experience the consequences. So he structures certain things in your life. He's God. He's able to do this. And there are certain things that we experience, sometimes as a result of what we did, and sometimes not as a result of what we did, but somebody else did. The Bible speaks of those two things there. And he uses these as teaching and learning lessons for us. And we begin to develop certain very important character traits. We develop certain attitudes. We develop faith. We develop prayer and reliance upon him. A lot of things start to develop in our lives as a result of when we are rebuked by him for whatever reason it may come. But we learn. He scourges every son whom he receives, and he's doing this for our own good. Now, like I say, this is very basic stuff here, isn't it? Very basic stuff. But we really have to, we want to focus in on this, simply because there is such an effort in the world today to try to get you to believe that you can do whatever you want, and somehow we're gonna make up for all of it. You don't have to suffer these consequences. We can get you by it. We got a pill. We got a fix. We got a pop psychology craze. We got some other kind of deal coming along here. You don't need this stuff. All right. Well, now we can't get around what God says. And so if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? In other words, you say this, you endure chastening. Okay, you come to understand what I'm experiencing because God sees I need it. Okay. Now, the rod and rebuke give wisdom. I think we can see that. A child left to himself brings shame to his mother. That is, he's left to bad behavior without his mother structuring consequences for that bad behavior. Now, this is going to be done very easily and save so many problems later on in life. If you learn how to structure in a right and an appropriate way consequences for your child whenever they start to go down the road of bad behavior. And you begin to train. That's train. You begin to train them then to help them to understand this doesn't work. Now, sometimes we actually teach our children that bad behavior works. They can have bad behavior, they can throw their tantrums, they can demand this and that, they can start to get their way, and we give in to them. In doing so, we're teaching them that there are some that they can do this throughout life. And you got adults doing the same thing today. They got some pretty bad behavior, and they've learned that this is how they can get what they want as adults. And they may like life miserable for people around them, their families, and anybody else for that matter. Now, you don't want to teach your child that. So God has set it up to where you, within your family, you can teach, and you can train, and you can set up a system of consequences, and there are many other things. This is only part of it. Now, I don't know if you did the program Growing Kids God's Way. Didn't I hear? But excellent. It really goes through that for you to tell how to go about all of this, what should come first, what should come second, and the various directions all of it should go, and how to go about it. See, there's movement today. In Australia, there's a movement, believe it or not, to say it's against the law to spank your own children at home. That's right. In fact, right now, if a child said something to a teacher or complained to a teacher or some authority, guess who's going to show up at your door? That'll happen. So people have to be very discreet in how they go about it. It's a shame. Now, I understand they're trying to prevent abuse. And unfortunately, there's a lot of that simply because parents don't know how to do this. They don't know how to set up the whole system of consequences and love and everything else that should go along with this. That's not the purpose of my sermon today. And it takes a lot longer than a sermon to get into something like that. All right. Now, but he brings shame to his mother. Is there ever an exception to penalties when a person sins? What I mean is, are there some instances when it simply doesn't happen this way? No penalty, no undesirable effects. Galatians 6, verses 4 through 8. Let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another, for each shall bear his own load. That him who was taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. Do not be deceived. Verse 7, God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. There are results in this. And this is the real world right here. This is the real world. This is the way things really, really work in the world today. That's the way they were set up. The world cannot bypass this in any way. Now, it may not seem this way, but there are always consequences for sin. Ecclesiastes 8, verse 11. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set on in them to do evil. Now it takes understanding to know what the consequences are. How does God's laws work? And the more you obey them, the more understanding you're going to have. Now there's a lot of scriptures on that I don't have a chance to get into today, but I will tell you Psalm 119 is very instructive in that, to assure you, and the entire book of Proverbs for that matter, that there are consequences. They do come. There are different kinds. Some simply take longer to play out in the life of a person. We covered one, the book of Proverbs. Let me just to give you another example. The book of Proverbs speaks of angry people. How do people become angry people? Now, this is a fault. This is why there's a lot of strife in the world today. People do get angry, and they don't know how to deal with their anger. Or were they ever taught to deal with their anger? Some go through life responding in an angry manner to the consequences that they so many times bring on themselves. And one thing leads to another, they become very, very angry people. And they spew out their anger from time to time and on people that, you know, well, what did I do, you know? And they are angry people. And God tells you what to do with anger. They are bearing a certain consequence. They are creating something for themselves, an environment to where people don't want to have a lot to do with them. How does a person get to be angry? What happens when a child? It responds with anger. What do you do? How do you teach them? How do you train that child not to do that? They got to be taught not to do that. Now, unfortunately, a lot of things happen to children, and they haven't been able to get past that. And so as adults, then, they do have a lot of anger. Now, they still have to deal with it. Arrogance and pride is a big issue in the book of Proverbs. The right kind of training by parents themselves who see this and understand these issues will guide a child in his approach to life and his relationship with others. If a child begins to assert himself in a way that is harmful or demeaning to others, the parents begin to see this and say, no, I'm sorry, you're not going to act this way in this house. Now, there are just a number of ways in which we can train our children so that they do not have to experience some of the terrible, terrible consequences of life. We need to get them started down that road. Proverbs 1, verse 8, right after he says in verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother. You know, the fathers have to have instruction, and moms, you really need to talk to your children. I mean, talk to them. I don't mean in a nagging way or a correcting way, but simply sharing what you've learned. Sharing your observations. Create that situation to where you have that communication and they begin to learn from you. And there's a law of your mother, and this is planted in their minds. There's a lot of things planted in a child's mind. I can remember it clear as anything. There are certain situations I found myself in as a teenager growing up that it was bad. And there was something that played over in my mind. What am I going to say to my mother? Furthermore, what story could I give to my father? It was playing over my head. And about that time, I looked for the nearest door. You want to know something that stops you cold? Is the instruction of your father and the law of your mother. I mean, stay with it. Don't neglect this. Talk to them, and establish that basic relationship with them to where you can talk, and it's taught, you know, all the time that you have that kind of a relationship. So it's in the early years where children learn the discipline of living in a family. God set the model of authority to teach. We have that same model and authority in the home. More or less in a limited way than the way God has it, but we still have it. And they learn right behavior. They learn respect. They learn responsibility, and they learn wisdom. They learn about right relationships and are encouraged with instruction and the right kind of intention. And they develop skills, and they develop talents, and they learn to develop, and they learn consequences and what happens when they stray from that path of what is right and good. And they learn to act responsibly. and they learn about the blessings and the rewards from acting responsibly. And you certainly want to teach your children good habits. It saves them a lot of problems in the future. Self-discipline, self-control, controlling their minds, controlling their attitudes. A lot of people can't control their attitudes. They don't get their way. And they take action sometimes. They really hurt themselves. Now, sometimes we don't know how. Many times it's just too daunting. Many times we live a life where our families become second or third or worse. That's just the way life is now. And the devil wants you to do that. And the devil wants to put you in a place where society itself will train your children. Worst place in the world for it to happen, because they will pay some pretty bad consequences in their whole life. Once they get out in the world, they won't understand how it works. If you don't teach them that there are consequences for bad behavior, either you try to make it so they don't pay the price for natural consequences, or you do not impose logical and structured consequences when you are teaching them that it's okay to behave badly. They can behave badly, they can act in certain bad ways, they can sulk, express anger, scream, demand, and we pay up. We teach them that bad behavior works, and people will always do what works for them. They learn what works for them, and they'll use that. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, let's conclude here. There's the old clock on the wall up there that somebody showed me. It's coming around to where I think we better close it down, but let's go here in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is a man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Now all sin, then, is going to be accounted for one way or the other. It's important that they learn instruction. And in learning instruction, they do learn repentance. They learn to seek repentance in time. They learn to want to change. They learn to that, look, there's a better way of life. They may not do it all at once, but they do that. But everything is going to be brought, every work. Nothing is exempt. And we can't teach our children that certain things are exempt. Once you do that, then they will use those exemptions in life, and it's not really not going to work for them. Hope you enjoyed listening about this this particular principle. As I said, it's a very basic principle, but it's a very important one. One, we can't let it get away from us. And always consider the fact that God's way works. God is always on his throne. God is always going to back up what he says, and God will always be God.